Radio Prague News.
The Justice Minister is seeking clarification on the legality of long-term detentions following a choirmaster's release from prison. Two men accused in the Kozitska affair, an alleged attempt to bribe an MP, are demanding compensation and their case closed. And two Czech football clubs advance in the UEFA Intertoto Cup. Justice Minister Pavel Němec has asked the Chief State Prosecutor to prepare a comprehensive analysis on legal issues surrounding the long-term detention of suspects on the grounds that, if allowed out on bail, they could influence witnesses. The Justice Minister's request followed a constitutional court ruling that led to the release on Friday of Bohumil Kulinski, the Bambini di Praga choirmaster charged with sexually abusing some 50 underage girls. Mr. Kulinski had been held in prison for over 6 months while awaiting trial. A Justice Ministry spokesman said that Niemetz believes the option of pre-trial detention had been abused by prosecutors. The Justice Ministry has said that it will not consider a demand for compensation by two men prosecuted but not convicted for allegedly bribing a member of parliament last year. The state's case against the two men, Marek Dalik and Jan Večírek, has been suspended due to a lack of evidence, but left open in case new witnesses step forward. In addition to seeking compensation, they want the case permanently closed. The Freedom Union MP who made the accusation, Zdeněk Kozitska, has maintained that Dalik and Večírek, acting on behalf of the Civic Democrat leader, last year offered him several hundred thousand euros and a diplomatic posting in Bulgaria to vote against the government in a confidence motion. The main opposition Civic Democratic Party, meanwhile, continues to dominate the political scene in the Czech Republic, according to a new poll. Nearly 34% of respondents said they would vote for the Civic Democrats in the next general parliamentary elections. The poll shows, however, that the governing Social Democratic Party has gained back some favour following the resignation of party chairman Stanislav Gross as Prime Minister this spring. The Social Democrats now poll at 23%, with the new Prime Minister, Jiří Paroubek, widely seen as a competent leader. Sport now, and two Czech football teams scored victories in the second round UEFA Intertoto Cup action this weekend. Slovan Liberec dispatched Betia Jerusalem 5-1 thanks to goals from Holosko, Zapotochny, Libor Došek and a couple from Miroslav Slepička. Another Czech team, Sigma Olomouc, beat Pogon Szczecin of Poland 1-0 courtesy of a goal from Petr Babnič. Zlín, however, lost 1-0 to the Belgian club Ghent. Weather, light rain is in the forecast over the next few days with daytime highs in the low 20s. I'm Peter Smith.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, and I'm David Vaughan. In just a short while, Ian Willoughby will bring us another letter from Prague. And then in Czech books, I talk to a woman of many talents, writer, translator, politician and doctor, Jaroslava Mozorová, who at one time even came close to becoming Czech president. But before all that, here are some of your letters in Mailbox.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox, Radio Prague's weekly listeners' feedback programme. Today you'll find out the name of the winner of our monthly competition, but first of all, let's read from some of the letters and emails that we have received over the past week. Mary Kretschmann from the United States has the following problem.
I have been reading your website for over 2 years and really enjoy it. I especially enjoy the ABCs of Czech, as I'm trying to learn the language. Just lately, however, the Czech accented letters are not transferring to the English language page correctly. They show up as double E's or three-quarter signs, etc. I read the German and French instruction pages and there is no problem. Is this something you could fix?
Well, I've spoken to our internet team and they told me that they certainly had not changed anything in the settings recently, so the problem must be with your computer, I'm afraid. In order to be able to help you, we would need a little more information, namely whether you are using a PC or a Macintosh, and which operation system and which internet browser you are using, that is Microsoft Explorer, Mozilla, Opera, etc. And just a reminder, all visitors to our website who are interested in reading our Czech language series need to set their browsers to Central European languages in order to view Czech characters properly. Now, Professor Bragg Brown from Virginia in the United States, a frequent visitor to the Czech Republic, comments on our coverage of the Czech Republic's Tax Freedom Day.
Sometimes I see Czechs take glory in their full citizenship and humanity, but sometimes I see some of them picking up some really stupid attitudes popular in the West. One of these stupid attitudes is the knee-jerk condemnation of democratic tax regimes, and the celebration of the day when all of one's earnings become discretionary. The mindless, thoughtless bashing of government and bureaucracy, even when they are reasonably democratic and allow all citizens the right to vote, run for office, participate, and criticize, is not politically intelligent. The media should help educate and inform its citizens, not pander to stereotypes and negativism as they do, by presenting Tax Freedom Day as sad news. Taxes, if you haven't heard, are what we pay for civilization.
Well, we did report on Tax Freedom Day, which this year fell on Tuesday, June the 14th, 2 days earlier than in 2004, according to the Liberal Institute think tank, which had calculated the date. But we do try not to be biased and to let both defenders and critics of the idea speak for themselves, rather than passing judgment in our own right. It's certainly an interesting subject. A passionate debate about taxes is going on between different parties in Parliament right now, and it will be one of the crucial issues in next year's general elections. Thank you very much for those letters and comments. And now, as promised, we have to tell you the answer to last month's competition question and announce the lucky winner. In our June question, we asked you to tell us the name of a linguist of Czech origin who in the 1930s designed and patented an alternative typewriter keyboard to the QWERTY keyboard. The answer is August Dvorak, who was a distant cousin of the famous Czech composer Antonín Dvořák. Catherine Farr from the United States wrote,
I didn't have a clue as to the answer when I first read your question. It's amazing what a little poking around on the web produces. I started reading your Radio Prague emails as preparation for my upcoming trip to Prague with my daughter in September this year. It has been really interesting and enlightening reading the daily news items this way, and I'm grateful for your service. Now, for what it's worth, I can add my newly acquired information on keyboards of all things to my trivia on the history of the people from the Czech Republic.
And David Eldridge from the United Kingdom wrote,
Dr. August Dvorak is the man you're looking for, a co-inventor of the Dvorak keyboard. Any investigation into the advantages and disadvantages of the keyboard soon gets complex, but it is a keyboard that is still in use today. Basically, the QWERTY keyboard was designed for typewriters with slow mechanical movements and before touch typing developed. Some consider the Dvorak keyboard to be superior for touch typing on today's PCs because statistically more keystrokes are made with alternate hands. Also, some people think that individuals could benefit from using both keyboards, the Dvorak keyboard when touch typing and the QWERTY keyboard when making visual PC inputs.
And our listener from the United States, Mark Zubik, sent us this email.
The answer is Anton Dvorak. Despite the success of his invention, it never became a popular keyboard layout. The phrase he was quoted as saying before his death was, I'm tired of trying to do something worthwhile for people. They just don't want to change.
And the winner is Admas Mulatu from Harare, Ethiopia.
I was your listener here in Ethiopia, and 5 years ago, when I was 16, I won a contest from your radio station. Now I'm a campus student and would like to take part in this month's contest. The answer is August Dvorak.
Congratulations, Admas, and your prize, a CD of Antonín Dvořák's Slavonic Dances, is in the post. And for our July question about famous Czech-born people, we return back to Europe. On June the 10th, 1923, a boy called Jan was born in Czechoslovakia's easternmost province of Ruthenia, now part of Ukraine, close to the Romanian border. The family was extremely poor, and in his adult age, our man claimed he had got his first pair of shoes at the age of 7. Both his parents died in a Nazi concentration camp, and young Jan managed to escape to Britain, where he joined the armed forces and changed his name. He started a career in publishing and he was a Labour MP between 1964 and 1970. But he was most famous for having built a publishing empire that spanned the world. In November 1991, he died under mysterious circumstances. Who was he?
And please send your answers by the end of July to Radio Prague, 12099, Prague, the Czech Republic, or you can send us an email to english@radio.cz. And mailbox is brought to us by Pavla Horáková. Please keep your letters and mails coming in. And now to Ian Willoughby with this week's Letter from Prague.
This weekend, I'm not actually in Prague. I'm a couple of hours' drive west of the capital, in the spa town of Karlovy Vary, which is currently hosting its 40th International Film Festival. The town of Karlovy Vary gets its name, like Prague's Charles Bridge and Charles University, from Emperor Charles IV. The story goes that he stumbled upon the then little-known village of Vary in 1358. He was so taken with its health-giving waters that he built a bath tower nearby and gave it its prefix and royal charter 12 years later. Some listeners will know Karlovy Vary by its German name, Karlsbad. For centuries, Karlsbad was one of the most elegant spas in Europe, its promenades and casinos the playground of aristocrats from around the continent. Many of its buildings are painted in pastel colours, and the great Swiss architect Le Corbusier is said to have once described it as a cream cake, which, given his own style, was hardly meant as a compliment. That was my own first impression too, when I visited on a day trip in August 1992. It just seemed almost too pretty and perfect, and so different from the typical Czech towns which had made such an impression on me that summer. But on many subsequent visits, I've grown to like Karlovy Vary a lot. Mention the spa town to most Czechs, and the first thing they'll say is Russians, it's full of Russians. And they're not wrong. It has become something of a Russian colony over the last 15 years, with much local property in Russian hands and a number of local newspapers in the language. But every year at the beginning of July, the town is in a sense reclaimed for 8 days by young Czechs when they descend in droves on the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of backpackers sleep in makeshift accommodation, tents or even sleep rough, just to be at one of the most enjoyable events in the Czech Republic. I myself would rather not go than sleep in a tent, but the students' enthusiasm is a big part of what makes the festival special. Another wonderful aspect, often commented on by actors and directors, is the relaxed and informal nature of the festival. Filmgoers get to see many of the filmmakers they admire up close, and the latter enjoy the kind of audience feedback lacking at other A-list festivals. Visitors also rave about the beautiful setting, and there is an argument to be made for Karlovy Vary itself being the biggest star of the festival.
Letter from Prague there with Ian Willoughby. And we'll end today's programme with our bi-weekly book programme, Czech Books. A very warm welcome to another edition of Czech Books. And for today's programme, I'm visiting someone who is very well known to Czech book lovers. That's Jaroslava Mozorová. So thank you very much indeed for agreeing to be on the programme.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I like radio.
Your biography is quite extraordinary. You seem to have managed to have three or four careers at once. On the one hand, as a leading Czech Burns specialist, and also as one of the country's best-known literary translators, also as a writer in your own right, as a diplomat, as a senator, and at one point you even came close to becoming Czech president. So many people know you in many different capacities in this country and internationally, but it's interesting that possibly at home you're best known as the translator of Dick Francis's novels from the world of racing, aren't you?
Well, yes, indeed, but I owe that to the writing of Dick Francis. He simply is the most popular writer in this country, which is amazing. And I like to think, and it's not wishful thinking, I would say, that people like his books because they feel the strong feeling he has for fair play.
You're also a writer in your own right. You've written stories and plays. Did you find it difficult to take the plunge in that sense of, instead of translating, you have the safety of having the original text? When you're writing, it's the blank piece of paper. Do you find it a very different process?
Of course it is a different process, because one can sit down to a translation any time, under any circumstances, whatever you might feel or what worries you may have. As a matter of fact, it helps you sort of eliminate the worries. While for original writing, you simply have to be well composed or feel like writing. Yet, when I write original text, I write much faster than when I translate.
That's because you don't have to think yourself into somebody else's mind.
Exactly. I'm now translating Kipling, and it's terribly difficult.
A few years ago, you published a collection of short stories or memories or little portraits of people that you've known in the course of your life, called in Czech Historke. I hope it'll also come out in English at some stage in the not-too-distant future. In a way, it tells your story, your own life story, rather wonderfully through the people you've known. So it's a kind of rather indirect autobiography, isn't it?
Not only autobiography, but it also tells a lot about the latter half of the last century. Because each of the stories, which start with people I met since my childhood, up to more or less the Velvet Revolution, illustrates the time at which it happened.
So maybe going back to your childhood during the Second World War, do you have a story in the book that you might like to tell?
Yes, and I think the story, I'll tell it, I won't read it. The story will show how the stories illustrate the time. The most important person of my childhood was Hilde. She was my governess. She was a Sudeten German, and I loved her dearly. I don't think I ever loved anyone, except my spouse, of course, and my parents, as much as I loved Hilde, really. Before the beginning of the war, she married a gynecologist, also a Sudeten German, and they moved to the Sudeten. And then after the war, immediately after the war, I took pains to find out when Hilde will be transported from the town she was in. Her husband was by that time in the Soviet prisoner of war. And I found out when she would be transported, and I told my parents that I'm going to the small town and I'm going to spend the last night with Hilde and that I'm going to carry her suitcase to the train next day. Well, my parents weren't too happy about it, because at that time the feelings were so strong against the Germans that to befriend any German was dangerous, in fact. But anyhow, they knew how much I loved Hilde, and they said, okay, you go, but don't provoke people. Be careful. Take care. So I went. I spent the last night with Hilde. We shared a bed in the camp where she was. And then I carried her suitcase to the railway station. And I think it was the most unhappy moment in my life, when she boarded the train and when I was waving her goodbye. I've never been so unhappy in my life, but I didn't have the slightest feeling that an injustice is being done. I felt it must be so, that it's awful, that it's regrettable, but that it cannot be helped.
Do you feel that to this day?
Yes, I do. I'm not ashamed of the feelings I had as a young girl. I know now, of course, that there were many among the people who were transported, that there were many who didn't deserve it, but then, well.
We touched on your career as a doctor. Obviously, one of the huge changing points in your life came in 1968 with the Prague Spring, then with the Soviet invasion, then with the fact that you were working as a Burns doctor when Jan Palach set himself alight, and you're one of the doctors who were in the hospital in the Burns unit when he was taken to hospital. This experience, this set of experiences, must have completely changed your perspective on life, didn't they?
I wouldn't think so. It certainly was a big milestone for the whole country, for everybody. and I don't like to talk about Jan Palach, but when people ask me about him, I never talk about him, but about the situation at the time and what made him do what he did. The fact that during the Prague Spring, so many intelligent and talented people suddenly surfaced and earned a lot of respect, the young people. And then after the Soviet invasion, when the so-called normalization set in, quite a few of these people, whom the young admired, started giving in. And I think, I know that Jan Palach did what he did to shake the conscience of the nation.
The story of what Jan Palach did inspired a play that you wrote, didn't you? Letter to Wollongong.
It's only marginally tied to what he did. It just makes the point of conscience and the importance of conscience and what can you forgive, what must you forgive others and what is hard to forgive oneself. It was the time of the greatest demoralization. As a matter of fact, that what the regime did to our thinking and to our attitudes was maybe the greatest crime the regime committed. It forced us into hypocrisy. It forced us teaching our children to be hypocritical. Truth was suppressed to an unbelievable degree. And you can feel the sequelae even now. Because, for instance, during the regime, during the totalitarian regime, it seemed to people that to be ambitious and to have drive is unreconcilable with decency. Because if you had any ambition and tried to make a career, you had to make concessions to the regime, which was unreconcilable with decency. And this somehow prevailed, so decent people still are sort of standing in corners and they don't come forward. And thus they allow more space for the less decent.
To what extent would you condemn those who gave in to the old regime? I mean, for example, the narrator in this one-act monologue, A Letter to Wollongong, she does begin to collaborate with the secret police. To what extent do you sympathise with those who took that step?
Well, I understand why she took it or why some people took it, but I still say that they didn't have to. None of them have to. No one had to join the party. No one had to cooperate with the secret police, with the exception perhaps of people in the 50s, people who were imprisoned and whose families were threatened and it was a question of life and death. But in the later years, after the 50s, no one had to. No. No one did.
When the communist regime finally fell in 1989, you were already nearly 60. Was it frustrating that it hadn't happened sooner?
No. I was glad to have lived to see the day. And an entirely new life started for me at the age of 60. And I suppose I've had more experiences and met more interesting people since than I ever did before.
And here in your flat, you can just see over from the window over to the right, you can just see Prague Castle. At one point, you were a candidate for the presidency of the Czech Republic. Do you ever stop and think, what if?
Well, yes, of course, because people make me, you know, strangers stop me in the street and say, well, we are sorry that you didn't, etc. The other day I was walking towards the castle where the presidential office is, and there was a family coming in the opposite direction. They stopped me and they said, what a shame you are not going to your office, which I thought was cute. Yes, of course. People make me, quite a few people make me think about it, but I didn't expect to win. I was surprised that I won in two rounds in the Senate, and my husband shuddered. So he was relieved when I wasn't elected, but, I mean, having been elected, I would have really lost everything that I enjoy. Anyone does who takes on this kind of an office.
Yaroslava Mozorova, thank you very, very much for talking to us for Czech Books today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And that brings this edition of Czech Books to an end. I hope you've enjoyed the program. If you'd like to send any comments on this or any of our programs to us, please write to Radio Prague at 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or send us an email to english@radio.cz. And you can also find the program in text on our website, www.radio.cz. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here at Radio Prague, goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures, 6h27. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 9415, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz.